All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming. This really is a fantastic topic, especially as I mentioned, as I kind of went through, and I know I see some familiar faces in the crowd, but as I've gone through this year and I've really made the commitment each month to come up with a new topic, I was thinking about what I was going to do for September. And I mean, are we in September? When are we? Oh, we're October. It was the end of September, beginning of October. So I was thinking, I'm saying, you know what? I'm sure there's going to be some flu epidemic. I was thinking about this in the middle of the year, and I'm like, I just want to wait. I made a deal with myself. I said, if there's a flu epidemic, I'm going to give my first Why We Get Sick talk. I've given it in different ways, shapes, or forms, and all. Next thing you know, unfortunately, there's a flu epidemic. And now everybody's, you know, afraid. I mean, there's, you know, we had the swine flu a couple of years ago, the bird flu a few years before that, you know, now, and there's just so much, disempowerment and then there's, you know, people are afraid because the essence of, you know, keeping ourselves healthy and the essence of the knowledge that healthy people don't get sick, sick people get sick, really somewhere along the way has been lost. So, you know, our goal here at Atlantis is to educate, right? I'm very well versed in school, is to empower and guide people toward optimal health and wellness, making Massachusetts the healthiest place to live in the country. And it's truly about that. It's about empowering people and guiding them through education. And as you hear when I typically start off these conversations, I say the number one defining characteristic of your health and well-being is your belief system. And it's because your beliefs dictate your actions. So what you do on a daily basis, ritualistically, defines who you are as an individual. So let me give you, for instance, whether you wake up in the morning and you have a cup of coffee first thing, or you wake up in the morning and you have a glass of water with lemon, you know, that does something very physiologically different to your body. Whether you wake up and, you know, there's screaming kids around the house and you're getting the day going that way, or you wake up, you know, half an hour before the kids go out, wake up and you meditate first, and then you're able to prepare for your day. So there are very specific things that you're doing driven by this program, the subconscious program that's going on that we are not conscious about. If we're not conscious about changing that subconscious program, it just drives us. And who defines our belief systems? Who defines that subconscious program? No, not you. Society, exactly. Fathers, preachers, teachers, media, doctors, you know, educators. It's the people around you. More importantly, the five closest people that you surround yourself with are the people that are going to most define your belief system. And your belief system is significantly laid out by the age of 5 years old. It can change, but there's a lot of hardwiring done at an early, early age. All right? So it's very important how we raise our children, because what happens is you're hardwiring them at a very, very young age. So we say that. So it's the people around you that define your belief system. Well, the good news is we live in the United States. The bad news is we live in the United States. Right? So where does the United States rank as of 2014, beginning of 2014, on the 50 healthiest countries in the world? 51. And as of 2014, based on life expectancy, we rank dead last. And, you know, it's because we have all these, you know, beliefs. How many people, you know, just show of hands, I mean, this is arbitrary. How many people think that milk is good for you? Right. How many people think milk is bad for you? See, that's driven by a belief. You know, milk is good, milk is bad. Butter, is butter good for you? No. Is margarine good for you? No, see, well, margarine used to be good for us, you know. So, but why? How come it's not good for us anymore? Artificial sweeteners, are those good for us?
No.
Why not? They don't raise our blood sugar levels. But then you have people eating sugar-free, fat-free. Fat-free. No. Would you rather eat an Olean potato chip? You know what an Olean is? Yeah, oh, it's all the goodness of the potato chip without the fat. I mean, what's that doing? And then people are, you know, blowing up because of it. We are listening to, you know, look at this thing. You know how many kids I see, right, at dinners, I mean, Fridays. I mean, I like Fridays. Fridays is good. The nines, come on. We all go to the nines. But kids are getting soda? I mean, you know, ultimately, how many people were here for my nutrition talk? Do you remember how much sugar your blood can actually hold circulating at one time? A half a teaspoon. A half a teaspoon. How much sugar do you think is in a soda? Right, and where do you think that goes? Right to the fat cells. Because you readily absorb sugar in our bodies. And it's all of this, the sugar and the food and you know, different sleep cycles. And we're living culturally because, you know, our mothers told us that. No, my mom's in there. Sorry, Mom. Sorry. My mom isn't. Forget about it. So that my grandmother told me, you know, that. But we're living in this world that we do things over and over and we don't even think about them. And I'm going to teach you tonight, I'm just going to come with a little bit of a different flavor for this whole cold thing. All right? And you know, because, like, who do we trust now? You know, right now, you know, the doctors is a big show, right? And they're actually cutting some edges off of some of these beliefs that they have. They're not doing a bad job. Now that they have a lot more funding of all these wellness products and stuff, they're starting to get skewed a little bit. But when they start up, they, you know, they weren't bad. Your friends, your teachers, you know, CBS News. You know, we've been on CBS News, I think four times. You know, ABC News four times. And when I started getting on the news, then people started listening. You know, because if you're on the news, oh, it's got to be right. I mean, I make this stuff up when I'm on there. You know what I mean? No, I'm joking. I'm only kidding. But you know, it's just because it's on the news just because it isn't on the news does not necessarily mean it's not correct. I'll give you a for instance. Did anybody click on that link? Did anybody click on that link with the Richard story? How many people clicked on that link? Right? So Richard's story was, he was a gentleman who is a cousin of a patient of mine, and he got his flu shot every year, as many people did, right? Got his flu shot year after year after year. One year he got his flu shot, this was 4 years ago, he got transverse myelitis, which led him to be paralyzed 2 weeks later. So Richard, I had a show last year, it's called Choices, and I had him on the show, and I interviewed him. And it was great. They loved it. And CBS News, they loved it. But guess what happened? Cut. They wouldn't do it. They were going to do it, and then they wouldn't do it. They said, we're sorry, we can't. We love the story, but we just can't get that out there because, you know, sponsorship. So you believe that you're getting the information, you know, disseminated to us in a very unbiased way, but we're really not. Everything that we see, especially when we turn on the tube, it's biased. And I want you to kind of trust the resource here as Atlantis, the resource here saying that I'm cutting through a lot of this stuff. And I know when I go over the next part of this talk, some of the stuff might not sit well with you. Or, you know, just because it's so grained in our culture, how we think. I mean, how many people have hand sanitizer in their bag right now? Come on, beat. Yep, hand sanitizer in our bag, right? Well, so where does hand sanitizer come from? You hear it all over the place. I mean, on everything. You pick up Men's Journal. You pick up any journal that talks about staying healthy this winter, what do they tell you to do? Wash your hands and sanitize your hands. You know, because of what? germs, which is called the germ theory. What is the germ theory? Does anybody know what it is? Louis Pasteur, way back, way, way, way back. What's the germ theory? Right. So what did he make the conclusion? That's exactly what he did. Germs get you sick, right? So in order for something to be, so you have to understand, it's a theory, germ theory. It didn't say germ law. Because in order for something to be a law, it has to be correct how many times? 100% of the time. So what the germ theory is, it is an assumption based on a set of circumstances, which I don't believe in the germ theory. I believe in something different. All right? Now, there's a, B.J. Palmer said, if the germ theory of disease was correct, we'd all be there'd be nobody be living to believe it. Because, you know, if you're in a room, and there's five people, and one person comes in with the swine flu, rawr, rawr, and I spit all over you, right? Or sneeze all over you. Two people get sick, three people don't. Why? Yeah, well, it could be their immune system, but yes, their systems are better able to adapt to that situation. So then I hear, well, you know, why do we get sick in the wintertime? What, you know, why October? I mean, why October do we get sick? We'll just burst some things out because there's a whole bunch of stuff that we all hear and we all say, you know, like, oh, we're all indoors in the wintertime, right? How many times do we hear that one? Right? We're all in close proximity. You know, so there are things that we hear and we say for reasons that we get sick. So why do we get sick in the wintertime? Lack of sun. Right. Lack of sun's one. Yeah.
Cold.
Yep. Gets cold.
Less exercise.
Where's the flu go during the summertime? I've heard that. I have. It goes up with the cold, you know, wave. But where does it go? And who's deciding what flu strain? Does anybody know how many, you know, it's not actually known, but the estimation of how many strains of the flu virus there are?
214.
Wow. Yeah, close, like 300 and something, right? So, and it replicates so quickly. How many strains of the flu are in the vaccine? Do you know? Three to four. You're correct. And when is that decided which flu? Yeah, in the April before is when they start making the flu. So how the heck do you, where to go first off to begin with? And people do get the flu and sick during the summertime. But, there's got to be other factors, you know? So then you hear, oh, we're all indoors. We're indoors. We're tight quarters. Tight quarters. Now, I want this to be like brain gym here, right? You've got to open your mind because it's not like sick, bug, take this, kill bug, better. It does not work like that. It is so easy for us to bring everything down to one variable and say that this is the cause. In fact, that does not happen. It's like everybody loves to press enter on the keyboard, you know, but nobody cares what happens in the background behind it, right? As long as I hit enter, this happens and we're happy, right? So now look at this. Has anybody ever seen traffic like this? Has anybody ever seen traffic like this in the summertime? How many cars would you say would go, like if you're in the traffic jam and you're going, after an hour, how many cars do you think have passed through that area? Have you ever smelt the guy smoking in the car in front of you? So does that mean that stuff passes from the car in front of you to through your car? So what about when you're driving down the freeway? How many millions of people's germs do you think you're getting in your car and sniffing them right through your nose?
Every one.
Every single one. Now, all right, no, but you need to be in how long do you have to be in contact with the virus in order to get it? Not long at all. All right? I could spit in your eye, and if I have a cold, you could get it. Or you might not get it. Right? It's a little teeny little spit. Or it could cough. Or you could be here. It doesn't happen like that. It can't possibly happen like that. Because if you lived in a bubble, right? If we lived in a bubble, would we ever get sick? No. Right? Theoretically, you wouldn't. Right? But you get out of the bubble, guess how long it takes you to die? Right. You can still get sick in a bubble. Because you have all of the germs inside of you to sicken yourself. Your body lives on bacteria and germs. You wouldn't get some of the opportunistic ones, but you couldn't still die in a bubble. All right? Because germs do not make us sick. We make ourselves sick. Louis Pasteur said on his deathbed, it's not the seed, it's the soil. So he said, I was wrong. It's the soil. It is resistance. It is all about resistance. And I am going to introduce a few terms tonight. This term is called maximum adaptable threshold. It's at that point where you pull an elastic band and you take it and you pull it and you pull it and you pull it and you pull it and it's at tension. There's one point where you can go like this and it snaps, right? So where these principles came out of, I was talking to George about this earlier. Before we get into maximum threshold, let's talk about assumptions. And you guys have all heard me talk about this. If you were here at the last one. I talk about a theory or assumptions. Assumptions that two people can make looking at the same exact variables going on in front of them. So let me give you, for instance, me and Louis, we're here to analyze the crowds at a concert. And we look at 500 concerts. Same things are going on. Concerts happening. Louis makes the assumption that every time a band plays, they market, they develop people, and then a concert happens. Right? Sounds feasible, right? I make the assumption, whenever there's a mass of people, a concert happens. Because every time I see a whole bunch of people at a concert. So we're looking at the same exact thing coming to do two different theories, two different conclusions. And if I was living in a world where everybody, if we ranked number one on the 50 healthiest countries in the world, I'd say, well, maybe I'm right. If Louis was looking at, you know, Japan, Finland, other countries, and studied the other countries and said, oh, no, this is what they're doing differently, well, maybe I'd kind of use his anchor a little bit more than my anchor. Does that make sense? So now I want to introduce this maximum adaptable threshold. It's at the point where you're pulling something, and then snap. All right? This is going to be a little complicated, so try to stay with me here. Our body has this general adaptive potential. So how well are we able to adapt to the external environment, right? So if we're sitting there and we have this internal resistance, our body has to, like when we go outside, our body has to adapt to if it's cold outside, right? What happens? We shiver. Now, if we don't shiver, what's going to happen to our core body temperature? It's going to lower, and then what will happen? You will freeze and die. So if you are not able to adapt to that external environment, you will die. And the person that is able to adapt the most lives longer until they survive. Right? I mean, I hate to ruin it for you. The movie, the Titanic, the boat sunk. Right? Spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear it, but some people died and some people didn't. They were in the same freezing cold water. Some people were able to adapt more than other people were able to adapt. That's called general adaptive potential. It's almost like it's analogous to like the Starship Enterprise with the shields around it. You know what I mean? If your shields are at 100% and you're shooting photon torpedoes at the ship, you know, if you have 100% and picture that stress, how much internalization, if your shields are at 100%, are you taking on the ship? None. If you keep pounding it with stress, what's going to happen? Weaken the shields. 50% weakness in the shields, how much gets through? 50%, right. So the more that we expose ourselves to stress, the narrower our gap becomes, okay? And your body's not going to want to die, is it? So you know, the more lack of sleep that you have, the hydration levels that we have, the stress that we're under, we're living at our maximum adaptable thresholds, a lot of us. So you change one environmental factor, like it gets cold or it gets dark, and snap, we get sick. All right? And I'm going to get you to understand a term called healthy sick, because that's a sick rebound. Add one more stress, what happens? Snap. And then, when does your body heal? At rest. So, do you think it's any coincidence that when you're sick, you're tired? No, because your body is rebounding. All right? So now, why does our body do this? And how does our body do this? It's very important to understand this. We have two systems in our body. We have this stressed physiology of these systems that are designed to keep us alive. So when we go outside and it's cold outside, what system do you think your body has to engage?
Survival
system, exactly. And then you think when it's freezing outside, you're just going to fall asleep and, you know, go to little butterfly land? No. These are growth and development systems. So they're constantly at, it should be in balance with each other. And we need to be in balance with each other. If not, if we are dominant to one side or another, that tells us a whole lot about what's going on. So, we expose ourselves to stress. We're outside. What has to happen? Well, we need to engage our musculoskeletal system, right? It's a fight or flight system is our musculoskeletal. So we start to tighten our muscles. These are survival systems. Remember, every single time you engage a survival system, you shut down a growth and development system. Okay? Every time you engage a survival system, you shut down a growth and development system. Which means, if I'm going to keep my head above water when I'm swimming, do you think that's a survival instinct? Mm-hmm. Right. What did my mother tell me I always couldn't do before I went swimming?
Eat.
Right. Why? Because you can't be in survival and growth at the same time. So, you cannot have a good digestive system, immune system, or reproductive system if you are in survival. So what does that mean? Try to wade water and go pee-pees. Doesn't work. Can't do it. So people that are always stressed can't go poo-poos. Right? If you have issues with the digestive system, the first place we need to look is what's the balance between this a person in survival and this person in growing and healing. So I know when somebody is sick or is getting sick that they're over here. So I need to look at their musculoskeletal system, their respiratory system, cardiovascular, and more important, metabolism. I need to see where the body is in balance. So then I come back to this and I say, okay, what are the stresses that cause our us to be at maximum adaptable threshold? And if I can take that elastic band and loosen it a little bit by changing those stresses, then when the winter comes or we go to Vegas and we come home, we don't get sick because we don't snap, right? So all it is releasing that tension a little bit. And I'm going to teach you the things during the wintertime or even the summertime to do to decrease that maximum tension threshold. And a lot of these stresses are the things that we're going to be addressing. So, you know, so what happens, right? First stress, boom. Then we get more stress. So we're living in this sympathetic world or this tension world. You know, the kids got to go to school and then we're running and, you know, the mother-in-law is calling you and the father-in-law is calling you and now you got to run over here, you got to do this and you're eating real quick and you're shallow breathing. Sound like life? Right? Right? And then you're watching the news and then you're getting all upset because, you know, new tax changes and you know, now we live in a more uncertain world than ever and we're always living in survival. And as long as you are living in survival, you're going to have what issues? Reproductive, digestion, and immune. And when people come into me, all three of those are a factor. 90% of the time. They all go together. So what has to happen? How does the body rebound? You get healthy sick. Your body gets sick. How many people have gotten sick when I started adjusting them? Right? You will catch a cold. Why? Because we start to release the nerve pressure. The body starts to say, whoa, what the heck is going on? It's starting to take a, an inventory. It says, boom, and it recharges. It's going to send you to bed. You're going to get tired. Why? Because when you heal, are you healing during the daytime when you're going, or are you healing at night at rest? At rest. You need to sleep. I don't care what you want to heal. If you want to heal a cut in your finger, you sleep more. You want to heal a cut in your foot, you sleep more. You want to heal a digestive issue, you sleep. Reproductive issue, you sleep. You know, I mean, I can only help somebody so much, but if you tell me that you're getting 7 hours of sleep a night, your body's going to break down slowly and slowly and slowly until you have issues. And you need to recharge those. We gain weight when we have lack of sleep. We lose our digestive tracts. We lose our immune systems. And the way your body will recharge, hopefully, you'll get healthy sick. Healthy sick is getting a cough, tickle in your throat, turns into a little cough, then it turns into sinus congestion, then some way, shape, or form in there you catch a fever, you get a little achy, and then it's gone. 3 days, 4 days, tops. That's healthy sick, believe it or not. That's recharging your batteries. That is typically what people get when we first start adjusting them. Unhealthy sick is an allergy over the whole winter. That chronic congestion in the back of your throat, chronic sinus congestion, that is unhealthy sick. That is unhealthy sick, or another name of it, chronic fatigue. Yes? We'll be getting to that. Okay? What I'm going to do now in the next few minutes, well, the next half an hour, I'm going to tell you what to do. Okay? I haven't done this before. You know, I'm not really a firm believer in promoting products. This is the first talk I'm going to do that at, because I firmly believe during the winter time there are things that we should be doing. Okay? And I am going to, I came up with kind of a list of things that I think you should be taking, and I'm going to tell you how to take them, how I take them to keep my family healthy, and how I think everybody here should take them. And I'm going to go into products. Usually I do a lot more just on nutrition, but during the winter time, because we can't get the great foods and a lot of the stuff is imported, it's important to supplement, especially if we're staying up now when the sun goes down. The reason why you don't need to so much in the summertime is because we're going to bed at the same time, but the sun goes down a lot later. And we'll get into that. Thank you. You need more sleep at different parts of the year. So you want to increase our adaptable potential, okay? A maximum adaptable threshold. And by doing that, we want to decrease the tension on that elastic band, okay? So we want to improve our body's ability to adapt. Basically, another word of it is stay healthy. So the first thing that I recommend in the wintertime is to drink water. When do you need more water, wintertime or summertime? You do need it year-round, but you don't need it. You need more at one. No, it's the winter. Yeah, because what happens is the air is drier. Anybody have a fish tank? If you have a fish tank, you lose water. It evaporates, right? So a lot of times you have to put, or your skin gets dry, and you have to put humidifiers in your house. Well, you are a walking humidifier because you are a walking. You're 98% water. So you're walking water. So you lose it 10 times faster in the wintertime. I mean, not 10 times. I don't know the exact number, but you lose a lot more. Skin gets dry. So you want to make sure you hydrate. Half of your body weight in ounces, way more important in the wintertime. You want to do one thing to keep yourself healthy, stay hydrated. You want to do one thing to decrease joint pain, stay hydrated. Your joint pain will decrease by 30% by just adding water, by just keeping yourself hydrated. It's a great thing. We are water. You can, how many days can you go without water? 3 days, right? 4 days. How many days can you go being dehydrated? You could go a lifetime being dehydrated, but you internalize that. That starts to pull the tension pattern. And then when you start to get into these drier days, bang, you really start to affect your physiology in a negative way. So here, this slide I typically, just talked about the sun going down. All right. Ultimately, we get our energy from the sun. Anna, can you pass those out? Thanks. We get our energy from the sun, and vitamin D, how many people have heard of vitamin D now, right? Right. And when you talk about vitamin D, A, D, E, and K, those are the fat-soluble vitamins. When I was going through to get my nutrition degree, we're always thought to be concerned with fat-soluble vitamins because they build up in the bloodstream, fat cells, and they can become toxic. Well, the newer research really disproved all that stuff, and especially with vitamin D, because so much you can't absorb as much. You could take more vitamin D than you can eat, and you get, what is it? I think it's like 10 times that being in the sun for 10 minutes. Right, because you get so much vitamin D from the sun. So people look at fatigue, they're going to look at vitamin D levels. And every single time when somebody's fatigued, you're going to see low vitamin D, somewhat iron. But the issue is the body's decreasing the vitamin D to make you fatigued because it wants you to sleep. So to take vitamin D when you're tired is a... I don't agree with it. I want you to sleep, get your vitamin D levels up, and then supplement with vitamin D, you know, when, you know, during the times of year that you're going to need it based on the sun going down. Does that make sense? So you can't, you can get more energy by supplementing with vitamin D, but what will eventually happen is you're going to deteriorate yourself inside because the body is trying to tell you to sleep. If you sleep, guess what studies show happens to your vitamin D? Without taking any vitamin D. So you use these things as a guide in a crutch, right? And you use them to accelerate your health. You don't use them to manage your health. Like, I don't believe, actually it's a rabbit hole, forget about it. I believe in supplementing to keep yourself at optimal levels, making sure that you're staying tied into these pillars. Hydrate and sleep, which we will talk about in 2 seconds. Another product that I have been working with recently, we actually started it last January, is a product called Virucid. It is, anybody ever heard of the product called Tamiflu? Right? It is an herbal Tamiflu where you only take in a very, very short period of time. And you take it for about 4 days, right when, and you have to understand the signs of getting a cold. You are sick weeks before you ever catch the cold. All right? I mean, how many people have been adjusted and I told them they were getting sick? Right? And why? Because your nervous system is going to react 4, 5, 6 days a week earlier before you ever even know it. But there are signs that are going on. Oh my God, you know, my back is getting a little achy and it's not normally achy. That's internal inflammation, one sign that you're getting sick. Like some people go like this and they're like, oh my God, I used to be able to crack and now I haven't been able to crack myself. You're getting sick. You wake up in that morning and your eyes burn. Okay, fine, you know, you didn't sleep that night. You wake up the next morning, your eyes burn, you're a little stuffy, you're getting sick. Even though the stuffiness goes away that afternoon and comes back at 5 o'clock that night, you're getting sick. Day goes through, you're a little run down, your eyes stop burning, you're getting sick. So you recognize these. Right when you start to recognize that sign is when you would take like a Virucid, or you would take like an emergency or an airborne. That's when those things work, to give yourself a temporary boost to the immune system. You can't take something to one of these things like echinacea or golden seal. You don't want to take those long term. You just want to take them for short temporary boosts. And then the last product that we picked up about a year and a half ago is a product called K-Pax Pro. K-Pax Pro is used in New York. It's a prescription in New York for AIDS patients to keep their immune system boosted. It's a high-level multivitamin, which focuses on the immune system, has a lot of vitamin A, and there are other products in it. So I stay on a K-Pax Pro, and then I also do vitamin D. I do about 5,000 IUs of vitamin D through the wintertime. The one I have there, we have different ones. We have a pill that's 5,000. We have a powder that's 5,000. The one I put on there is a spray. You would spray 5 times. In your mouth, each spray is 5,000. So there are some different products like that you want to stay on through the wintertime. And then the last one, which I didn't put on here, is a probiotic. Why would I recommend a probiotic? Healthy digestive system, healthy immune system. And I have another theory that I can't find any research on. Healthy reproductive system, healthy immune system. You know what I'm saying? All right. Yeah. Yeah, my mother's here, but I really firmly believe that there's no research on it, but I it's got to be. I mean, you know, if I have a principle, if I'm watering the garden and I step on a garden hose, and my principle is such that 100% of the time, I know by law that that garden is going to be affected. Can we agree on that? Right. Bone out of alignment, putting pressure on a nerve. 100% of the time, I know that that interferes with the nervous system and that body is going to be affected. Right? 100% of the time, immune system is tied into the digestive system. Well, the reproductive system is also a parasympathetic. The reproductive system is also a growth and development system. So it's got to be tied in. I just don't think the research is there yet. Right? Principles. We work on principles. And if you have the right principles, everything else doesn't matter. Right? Then you can start to play these things. If you say, all right, you know, I am, you know, I mean, how many people get sick during their wedding, you know, planning their wedding? No, you get sick after your wedding when you're on the honeymoon. You know, why is that? Stress, stress, stress. Anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. Body's like, go, go, go. Survival, survival, survival. Oh, I'm going to rest. The body sends you all the way over to healthy sick. And it says, whoa, whoa, whoa. You messed me up over the... Well, marriage is a great thing. I'm married. I'm not saying that. But, you know, so, you know, your body's been in this state of survival for such a long time, it recharges and rebounds over. So that's my thing on supplementation. When does your body heal?
Rest.
Not just hanging around watching, you know, America's Idol. What is it?
Bachelor.
Bachelor, yeah, Bachelor. That's like, oh, I'm resting. No. And not while you're reading. I mean, reading's great, great for the mind. It heals in REM sleep. Okay? Our body does most of its healing at night, recharge the batteries, but it does 80% of its healing in REM sleep. It is so, so stinking important to go through 8 sleep cycles a night, uninterrupted. I know. Let's just say 8 sleep cycles a night. 8 sleep cycles, for those of you that don't understand sleep cycles, you go through like a deep sleep, like a regular sleep, you know, deep sleep, REM sleep, stage 1, 2, 3, come out, boom, 5 stages of sleep, up and down, up and down. When you, you know, wake up because your cat farts, no, because you fart cats, one of those two things, it's because you're in this shallow sleep. He's farting all night, right? Or she is farting all night, but you only smell it when, or hear it, you only hear it when you're in the shallow sleep. So people that think they wake up easy or you're waking up during, you're coming out real close to that shallow sleep. And if you're in any amount of pain when you're sleeping, what happens is you come way too high and your threshold to wake up is you can just hear a pin drop. There are ways to I gave a sleep talk actually on my website. All of these are posted to my website. You go to About Us and then the Sleep 101. That's a great talk if you're having difficulty sleeping. But those sleep cycles are important, and it's extremely important to understand energy spikes. All right? Anybody know what an energy spike is?
Yeah.
What's an energy spike?
When you peak out and then it crashes.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're down low, you're down low. It's like, oh my God, I'm so tired. Let me just make it to midnight. Yeah, I'm up. Now you can't go to sleep, right? You want to know what's important with the energy spikes? First off, if you're in REM sleep during an energy spike, you're going to quadruple your healing, right? Every hour of sleep before midnight is worth 2 hours of sleep after midnight. It's because midnight and noon are typically energy spikes. All right? Now, haha! Now I'm going to, this is the mind warp. All right? All right? This is a mind meld here. Oh, this is fun. I snuck a slide in here, and I forgot to bring it back. There it is, right there. See this right here? 103.9. What do you think that was? That was my daughter's temperature. All right? That was my daughter's temperature after an adjustment. Her temperature was 102 at... 8 o'clock. She woke up, and I adjusted her. And then we took it 10 minutes later. No, 8:30. No, not, it was at 9 o'clock, so it was 9:30. And then he took it 10 minutes later. It was 103.9. So what do I know is going to happen? A fever is going to follow your energy spikes. All right. So you ever hear that? You know, like a child usually gets a spiked fever at night, and then they wake up and it's low, and then noontime they get another fever, and then it's low. A healthy fever goes up and down, up and down. You want to know why? What is determining, what's causing the fever? I guess it's not a good question. Your metabolism is causing the fever. Not your immune system. Holy mackerel. What did I just say? This is extremely important. Your what is causing the fever? Right. Not your? Right. Why does your body engage the metabolism to raise the temperature? Because your immune system functions optimally at higher temperatures, but bacteria and viruses don't. So the metabolism increases. So how can you then artificially cause a fever? Jacuzzi, steam room, saunas, warmth. You double your healing at higher temperatures. So if you feel like you're fighting a cold, what do you want to do? Stay warm. You want to give yourself a fever. Holy mackerel, fevers are bad. No, fevers are bad. Take medication. Fevers, bring it down. Seizures. You know, I've seen them. Trust me, I'm not making light of them. They happen.
What's the highest temperature you can get before?
Brain damage, right? So remember, who's causing the fever? Your body. Is your body... So the research now shows your body will not, you will faint and pass out before you're able to reach maximum temperature threshold to kill yourself. Can't happen. Nobody's ever done it. So something else kills you. But I mean, it won't go there. But the temperature that your body can get to, a child can get to 108. All right? An adult, right about 105 before brain damage sets in. Yeah. So now, you know, if you're kind of reading through the pediatric journals and looking at that stuff, you know, the high fever is now considered about 105. A treatable fever is about 103, 104. About 99. I mean, nobody's given the immune system any chance of anything. You know, so what happens when you suppress the immune system? When do you think that goes? It goes into your lungs. And then you get the coughs and stuff like that. You chase it deeper and you're sick the whole winter. And especially if you take an antibiotic this time of year. If you take an antibiotic this time of year, you really, there are steps that we're going to need to take. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to make sure. I mean, it will come back up. That's just a little. It shouldn't go down to 97. It should drop just below. Well, 97.9 should never go down to like. You are, yeah, because the body temperature regulates. If it's not regulating correctly, it's still sick. Just like an upset stomach, to me, that's sick. That, yeah. Because they're bringing down the fever. It is. I know. That's just part of the culture. It's wrong. And now, I mean, it's pretty well documented that it's wrong. But it's just the way that we. It's why we've got to where. Why we're 51 and we're not. And we're not one.
Is exercise another way to try to artificially?
Okay. So there you go. That was the next thing I was going to say. You got, so a lot of times people are like, oh, I worked out my fever, right? I worked out the cold. All right, guys, here we go. All right. Now, we only have so much energy that our bodies can utilize, right? And if you're, you know, running a marathon, you're just killing yourself. You're suppressing yourself. But Mike is correct when he says that you will amplify your healing if you raise your body temperature through exercise. You have to play. You can't wake up early to exercise. Sleep is way more important, right? If you don't believe me, try to go a week without sleep and go a week without exercising. All right, sleep is way more important. So sleep first. Now, like I tell my wife, should I go to the gym this morning? All right, here's the deal. If you can exercise, but then you can sleep and nap, then you're golden. All right, so if you're going to exercise a little bit later and then go right to bed, you know, you got to make sure that you're able to go right to sleep. If not, you're going to just wear yourself down. But if you're sick because you're really worn down, then it's an issue. If you want to exercise and you're sick, I would just ask me first. And then I'll have to, there are a bunch of variables that go. I exercise if I'm fighting something. But the principles, if you use them here, you start to understand, well, as long as I sleep and I exercise and then I can sleep again, it's good. And don't worry. Let's say you're an 8-hour night sleeper, right? 8 hours, and you got sick. There's something else way out of balance, one of these pillars. And then what happened is, it's okay to sleep 8 hours, nap an hour or two, and then sleep another 8 hours. You see what I'm saying? It's okay to make up sleep. We're all willing to, like, if we go to bed at 10 o'clock, we're all willing to have that midnight that we stay up, but we're not willing to go to bed an hour earlier, 2 hours earlier. Right? Everybody can stay up later, but it takes self-discipline to go to bed early. 8 hours of sleep, to answer your question, is preferable. I'm more of the 8.5-9 hours of sleep, because I'm going to tell you, I run amped up, right? I mean, some days I can see 115 people. So if that happens, I have to have the same amount of energy, and then I'm giving a talk at lunch, like today. Woke up this morning, right, for a group that I'm part of. I woke up at, what time? Like 5:30. Did the group. Then at lunch, I spoke at the Rotary. And then I went from that. I came home and I put my hearth thing together at my house because I had to get that done. And then I had to get some other stuff done. Came back, saw a whole bunch of patients this afternoon, giving a talk right now. And then, you know, and then I'll, you know, then whatever I do tonight. So, but in order to have that amount of energy and to be able to adapt so I don't get sick tomorrow or the next day, I need to recharge my batteries. I drink seven of these a day. I mark them off, right? And I'm always here moving it because I got ADD, so I can't remember if this is my first one or my last one. So I mark these off. I drink seven of those a day, and I sleep. That's like the major thing I do. And I make sure that I do get 9 hours of sleep. And I make sure that I'm in bed before midnight, like 9:15. I know I'm a nerd, except tonight. Go ahead. If you are consistent with your nap, okay? Yes and no. Here's the deal. If you always get 7 hours of sleep with a nap and that's consistent, your body will get used to it. Because it will make up, actually what it will do is it will go through your sleep cycles quicker and then you'll be able to make up some REM sleep during that nap. All right? Like, a bad thing for me is I had to take a nap like 2 days ago and I dreamed during my nap. That's bad. If you're dreaming during your nap, and you're getting the electric jolt and your arms are flailing, that's bad because you're sleep deprived. It's good that you did that, you know, but just rest assured that it should not be a normal thing. If you take a nap and you take a nap and you rest and you know, and it's a good nap, you know, like a half an hour recharge nap, that's okay. Shouldn't be.
People who like fall asleep on the couch for 2 hours and then go up the stairs.
that's still okay. And if you fall asleep and then you go upstairs to go to bed and then you fall back asleep, you're good. Yeah. All right? Every night you got to fall asleep on the couch. And then this is the biggest thing before we kind of get going and I open up some things for some questions. Lair, warm. Somebody asked me about, is the person who asked me about cold showers in here? Yeah. So the whole idea behind that aspect is cold showers, your body, the reason why you get sick now and then it like kind of the deep part of the winter, but then towards the middle and the end, people tend to get less sick, is because your body adapts to the cold. Your blood thickens, things like that. So if you're doing that during, like, say, the summer, you know, into these colder months, and you're taking colder showers, you will get that adaptation quicker, all right? So, but it is still, you still want to, don't mistake that with being warm, okay? So the cold showers increases spin. It does a whole bunch of different cool things. Gives a lot of energy into your system. But you still don't want to be cold all day. Like that, like a lot of times people will say, oh, I keep my house cool. You still, remember, a core body temperature, I mean, keeping your body at 98 degrees is a survival system. It takes a significant amount more energy to keep the body at 98 degrees in 60 degree weather than it does in 80 degree weather. And your body is going, it's going to go into survival, and your body is going to pull from the immune system, and you will get sick. My kids get sick because they kick all their covers out, and they're sitting with no shirt on, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And they wake up, and they're, were you cold last night? The lips are blue. No, you're going to get sick. So does cold air make you sick? No, but being cold and chill does, because it makes you be sympathetic dormant. You're in survival all night, and then you get cold. Yes? That's all day long. We'll talk about different insulating layers. That
I know I got more insulation than most, but I sleep now. I got my own blanket and my feet hanging out.
All right. Here's a way that you determine if you're chilled. You use your hands. If your hands and feet are always cold, your body is working too hard to keep your core warm. Okay? That's it. So, my hands and feet are always cold during the wintertime. Yeah, it's because your body is working to keep, it doesn't care about your hands and your feet. You can stick these things in ice cubes. I mean, it's called ice bath. You can't stick your whole body in it or you'll die. So your body can get rid of the blood out here. It cannot get rid of the blood in the core. Your vital organs are extremely important. And if your hands and feet are cold, try putting 5 layers on and then see what happens to your hands and feet. I'm a firm believer, and I will be talking about this more next year, maybe a little bit going into this year, are the infrared saunas. I really, really, really believe steam rooms and infrared saunas are a great way to keep yourself healthy during the wintertime.
So what's your take on AC during the summer?
AC? As far as air conditioning?
Yes.
No, I'm not a big fan of it. I'm more a fan of taking like a cold shower and then being warm in front of a hot fire. Okay? Those things the body adapts well to. And last thing, I'm a big believer, obviously, in the chiropractic adjustment, because ultimately nervous system interference makes the body run inefficient. And when you're looking at keeping yourself healthy, I believe you first start with sleep. Second thing you start with is hydration. Third thing you do is you get yourself adjusted, because one adjustment will boost your immune system by about 100% for 24 to 48 hours after the adjustment. That's why you get fevers right after the adjustments. That's why you get sick right after adjustments, because it helps you whip back quicker, right? It helps that rebound happen a lot quicker. And then I believe that you should supplement through the wintertime. And I always believed in supplementation. I just wasn't at the point where I wanted to make a formal recommendation on it, but I have. Thanks for coming. I'll go home and go to bed.
One of my problems is I can't stay asleep.
Oh, I know.
You can set your watch, you know.